Love.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. This is Loveline. With Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew.
Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board-certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. And tonight, we welcome back to the show, dear friend, Ben Stein.
I am humbled.
Great to see you, Ben.
It was great to see you. I listen to you, and I travel all the time. I always ask at the desk of the hotel, what station do I get Loveline on? I listen to it, and I feel like I'm right there with you, too. And of course, by extension, with Jimmy.
God.
Because I think of you and Jimmy as basically being married.
We really are.
Well, they are, yes. They're what they call life partners.
I think so.
Oh, yes.
I think so.
One day the state will recognize our love.
Well, you tried many times now. You almost got it through in California.
Yeah. Ben, by the way, is, well, now they're showing Win Ben Stein's Money back on the Game Show Network.
2 hours a day.
I do believe.
2 hours a day.
Yes.
Only the ones with Jimmy as the co-host.
Well, they only want the cream.
That's right. Well, Jimmy was unbelievably good. Although, you know, Sal is unbelievably good, and Nancy was great, too.
But that's right. Everyone is great.
But Jimmy, well, Jimmy's in a class by himself.
He is.
Yeah, he is.
And, you know, the thing that's crazy is you know, you think, well, when did they shoot this? Late 90s, 2000 and change. You know, Jimmy's wearing sweaters that date the show. I mean, Jimmy's wearing a sweater that is 20 years older than the show is.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm
really?
Saying?
That was not his fault. That was wardrobe. He did not have the world's best wardrobe.
I know, but he dressed like Dave Coulier dressed in Too Close for Comfort. No, what the hell was it? Step By. You know,
Full
the
House.
Old, Full House. He's wearing. He's very Coulier-esque from Full House, because that show was shot in 79. This one was 2001.
But I think he was supposed to be sort of looking retro.
It worked good. And you know, when you...
Makes a good story now, anyway.
When you're sort of barrel-chested and you got a big cabeza, there's nothing like a big fluffy sweater to really slim you down.
V-neck. It's perfect.
With stripes horizontally.
Jimmy is very thin now.
Oh, he's pencil thin.
Svelte.
He is.
we fear for him.
He is. He's like almost anorexic.
He's going to blow away. I think he has a disorder. Drew, you've got to talk to him. Someone's
going
to get that boy to eat a hoagie or something. speaking of that, I'm hoping he's having a Super Bowl party. Drew, I know you're pee-whipped and not allowed to do anything that other guys do or with guys at any time, even once a year at the Super Bowl, for the love of Christ, so you'll surely not be there. Drew, do you ever think about your life that's an impossibility that you can't go to a guy's house and watch a Super Bowl once a year?
That's weird.
Do you ever think about that?
Yeah.
A guy who likes sports?
Yeah.
A guy who enjoys other human beings. Did you ever think you would paint yourself into that sort of emotional corner where it was almost impossible for once a year for you to go to someone's house, crack a beer, and watch a football game with a group of people?
Well, what would your wife do if you said, honey, I'm going over to Jimmy Kimmel's to watch the Super Bowl?
She'd go, great, take the boys.
You're kidding.
Wait
a minute, that's ridiculous. Why don't you have a full-time live-in help? You're a well-to-do guy.
He's got people. You've got people. Drew won't let himself do it.
Yeah, I don't know if we feel like we spent all our time.
What's that? Is that the sound of being pee-whipped?
Yes.
That's very funny.
Yeah, that's true. No, I mean, Drew, boy, Ben's a soft touch. I like that. He's easy. My point is Drew,
right.
You won't let yourself do it.
You're right.
Your wife wouldn't make a big deal out of it.
No, it's not even her. It's me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Look into it. Not that we want you there, but Ben, we'll see you there, right?
Well, if I'm in town, is Jimmy's house finished, the new one? I mean, he said it was going to be finished January 15th, and I said, of what year?
Yeah, I don't know, but all I know is it doesn't have to be finished. It just has to have food in it, and the TVs have to work, and we're cool.
Do you know how many TVs he has? It's either 17 or 19.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like a sports bar.
Where is the house?
It's the same place.
It just redid it.
Yeah, just redid it.
Wow.
Put in a sports book worth of television sets.
So it's like Caesar's Palace when you go in there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And some are pretty big.
Yeah. You know what was awesome last year? Last year at his party, they did that thing where they go, look, everyone's picking a square. And there's literally, I don't know if you were there last night, last year at Jimmy's, but there was 45, 50 people there, and they made the big Cousin Sal, you know, it's a gambling addiction.
He's a genius at betting, though.
He's a genius. Genius.
Yes.
Yeah, genius. No. Just like Jimmy's a genius at picking out sweaters. he makes a big box in the grids, and you got to just put your initials in them, right. You know, what quarter, what's the score at the NIH score. So I, as usual, because I live so close to Jimmy's, I just walk over in flip-flops and sweatpants, and I'm going to get drunk and lose my wallet, so I don't bring my wallet, and I don't have any money. And I'm like, I don't have any money. And Jimmy reaches into his pocket. He's like, put 20 on that, 20 on that, and 20 on that. And I just put my initials in like three random boxes and go back to eating.
Yeah.
And won $1,850.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Wow.
The part that, the part I think Jimmy took offense to is I didn't want to pay him back his $20. I didn't feel it was right that he asked for his money back. Not that day. I would have made it up to him in the form of a lunch or something, but I didn't feel it was right.
Yeah,
I gave him his 20
weird,
back.
Awkward, yeah.
Yeah. So Ben Stein has a movie coming out on February 18th called Son of the Mask, which we figured out is about 11 years after the first Mask hit the theaters,
I think,
right?
That's about right. Yeah.
94, I think we figured out, 93, 94. Mm-hmm. And what's the story? What's your part? First
My
off.
Part is the same part I played in the first one. I played Dr. Newman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is going to shock you. A Jewish doctor, psychiatrist, Dr. Drew, mm-hmm. who is a expert in the masks people wear.
Ah.
And he has now moved from private practice to being the curator of a museum of masks. And at the first, I am on screen for about the first 7 minutes, and I am something horrible is done to me by the villain of the movie.
Ah.
And I sort of have picked him out as who he is when he was trying to be incognito, and he's done something awful to me.
Oh, all right. Drew wears the mask of someone who's not pee-whipped.
Occasionally.
In actuality, you just lift that mask.
But you know why? That's a big question, because I have a lot of friends who are totally controlled by their wives,
mm-hmm.
and my wife doesn't try to control me in any way whatsoever, and in return, she got an 11-carat diamond for Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well,
so that's really, wives who are listening to this, that's what you get if you don't try to control your husbands.
Right. But, I mean, I think Ben kind of pushes the envelope.
He did.
With
he put
the
it over the top. And the, yeah, yeah.
And doing the blow off the hookers in the family room.
That's why it was 11 carat diamond, not a 4 carat diamond.
But yeah, it's a Kobe kind of lifestyle he's living, so you have to make it up in jewelry. Yeah. But I do believe that all the guys I know who are pee whipped sort of blame it on their wife, but the reality is
it's your own thing.
They feel more comfortable. You know what you're like? You're like a dog who has run of the house, but when the
doors
owners
open.
Leave, you go back in your crate.
Yeah.
That's you. You like it in your crate.
Mm-hmm.
You feel more secure in your crate.
All right, I'm going to say something now, and you're probably going to make fun of me for saying this. That's an incredibly insightful observation. That's incredibly, unbelievably insightful.
That's
what I love
last time Ben was up here, we had a
show. He gives me compliments.
We had a call. We talked to an abused woman. We recognized the abuse in her voice, and we remember this? And you were like, that was the most amazing call I've ever heard.
Yeah. Some of the calls I've heard when I've been on the road are just beyond belief. The thing that always amazes me is, first of all, it's hard to believe the stories are real, like 13, 14-year-old girls having affairs with 45-year-old men, and they're wondering if they're being taken advantage of. But also, when you sort of read them the Riot Act, they patiently take it, and they don't, like, yell back at you or say, stop torturing me. They're incredibly self-lacerating in every way.
Well, you know what it is? It's you ever see that old footage of prison footage of guys being brought to the gallows, and they don't seem to struggle at all? Like, here they are. Here's some old footage.
That's actually a well documented phenomenon. Like, it's like when the Germans were marching the cities off to the giant graves.
Yeah,
people just walk quietly and
stay in line.
Yeah.
What else could they do? I mean,
it's the escape when there is no escape. Is that you shut down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what your brain does when you're in assault and you can't escape it. You just
But I think what the interesting thing here is to start where we started, which is with your wife not letting you go to the Super Bowl party, and now we're to the Nazis marching the Jews off to be killed at Babi Yar. I don't think they're quite the same.
A decent analogy and a little bit of a stretch, I will admit.
We got there rather quickly, though, didn't we?
It didn't take
very,
long.
Very quickly.
All right. So, Drew, you'll be on a train.
Here's my thing. I work. This is really what's behind all of it, is that, at least on a conscious level, is I work a lot, and I feel guilty when I don't spend my free time with my family.
Yeah, but Super Bowl.
And so, I know, Super Bowl, I know, once a year, that's the retarded part.
Yeah.
I know.
But I get angry. I get angry at people who didn't watch the Super Bowl, yeah, even if I'm casual, and they weren't going to the party. Just ones who spent the day, you know, raking
doing
leaves.
Else, yeah.
Well, I don't think anyone in L.A. except Hispanics rakes leaves in any event. I mean, have you
That's a good point.
I mean, when we were children in the East Coast, those of us who grew up in the East, we would rake leaves. But I don't see any,
them now.
Hueros, yeah, raking leaves.
Yeah. The gringos lost his connection with the leaf.
Yes.
We really have no leaf connection anymore. Drew, when's the last time you dove into a pile of leaves?
Oh, decades.
Yeah, for me, it's been weeks. No, we don't have leaves. We occasionally you get hit by power wires. Ben Stein here tonight. We will take some calls. Ben will weigh in. Ben is not only amazingly complimentary, but he's honest as the day is long and doesn't mind talking about almost anything. Strip clubs in Dallas. That's one of the topics he wants to talk about tonight. What about that, Ben?
Well, when I was in Dallas recently for a speech, the people who put on the speech said, oh, we're going to take you to dinner at this club. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, is this going to be a strip club? And they said, yes. Uh-huh. And I said, well, I don't know if I want to go to a strip club. I said, all right, well, you know, we'll take you to the part of it where they don't have the stripping. So I said, all right. But by the way, my wife couldn't care less whether I go or not. Mm-hmm. So I went
Nor
to
her
it.
Boyfriend.
And in fact, we were in the part, the very exclusive part, where the girls with the biggest, most sensational bodies, let us say, were dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And
bouncy,
it was
bouncy.
Just fabulous. It was just incredibly fabulous.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was very, very impressed. And I think Dallas has better clubs of that kind than Vegas.
Well, it's tough to judge. It's tough to quantify. You know, there's no mathematical theorem for
it's
it.
It's very personal.
Personal. But I think we could agree if we went into one club and then one or the other, which one scored higher.
But isn't there a sort of a circuit? So you might be hitting one on a good week.
Yes, yes. But there's the one that we went to in Dallas. If I'm not screwing this up in my memory, it was called The Lodge. And it was just incredible. It was just amazing.
The F word almost came out.
Yeah.
Did you see
that? It was very impressive.
Ben, you want to know something that I found? It's a fairly recent revelation, something I didn't know, that a fair amount of guys I know have an orgasm via a lap dance.
I have never done that.
And that we found
I haven't
out
either.
A stripper talking to us in this show said that a lot of guys wear condoms to the club.
You're kidding.
So they don't mess themselves.
Yeah.
Wow.
And now I get it. You know what I mean?
What did you think there? You're joking, right?
Well, no. I always enjoyed a lap dance, but, you know, a couple times a year was enough. The guys who went every Friday night,
you know
I was
why.
Like, well, what are you going teasing yourself? They're not teasing themselves.
No, I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
There is a pot of gold at the end of their rainbow, whereas for me, I just would keep driving and staring at it from the back of Dad's station wagon, but it never actually got to the gold part. And then it was sort of, as your Levi's wear thin, it sort of wears out. It's like, all right, I've had enough of this rubbing. There's a point where you're begging to go home and take care of yourself. These guys, if they're having an orgasm at the club, you can kind of understand why they're going back Friday night.
Oh, and they do go back. When I was at this club in Dallas, the girls seemed to know, except for me and the guys I was with from the convention, they seemed to know just about everybody in the room.
Really? Yeah. A lot of regulars.
Yeah.
All right. And did you get a lap dance?
I'm not going to say what I got. I'll just say.
Oh, boo.
I'm not going to say what I got. I just say I had a very wonderful visit. And actually, I had a kind of a funny experience.
Hold on. Let me say something. You saying no lap dances mean you got three. You say I'm not going to say what I got. We're into the high teens, low 20s.
Well, then wonderful visit.
Easily.
Well,
go ahead.
No, this wonderful girl was visiting with me. And she said, I said, you're so pretty and so cute. And she said, well, she said, I've never been to Los Angeles. I'd love to come visit you in Los Angeles. I said, you're kidding. You really? I mean, you hardly even know me. She said, yes, but I know you're a star. And I said, oh, God, I'm so grateful. And she said, yeah, just I would come visit you anytime, Mr. Stiller.
thought you were Jerry Stiller.
No, you see that I was Ben Stiller.
Sorry about that.
Someone had told her I was Ben Stiller.
Wow.
And see, that happens to me all the time. People come up to me and say, you're Ben Stiller.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, well, that was my first thought, and then I did the age math figured you're closer to Jerry than
Ben.
Well,
I'm not sure.
You're in between Jerry and Ben.
How old do you think Ben is?
Older than you.
Jerry's a lot older, but Ben's
got to be 40.
Could be 40, 42.
I think he's maybe even older than that.
Yeah.
He could be 39 to 42.
Okay, and how old do you think Jerry is?
75.
Jerry,
then I'm closer to Jerry.
Jerry could be 75, but then Jerry just has that sort of Ernest Borgnine sort of perpetual
75-year-old.
Yeah, it's like when he was in the fifth grade, he looked like he was like an old Jew, like an old rabbi. So here's what I was going to say, and this is another interesting thing Ben brings up, which is, they could think you were worse guys than Ben
Stiller.
I'll tell you that right now.
You're not kidding. He's an incredible actor.
But women, we've talked about this before, the allure of celebrity. And one of the allures of celebrity is for women, there's a safety factor. Like, if you go in and the woman is attracted to you but doesn't know who you are,
you could be a killer.
She doesn't want to leave with you.
Right.
Who the hell knows what you're going to do?
Right. Ted Bundy.
Right. It could be Ted Bundy.
Right.
If she knows you from TV or wherever, movies, whatever, you're safe. And she feels like she knows you. Mm-hmm. Whereas with guys, that's a non-factor. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're going to meet some hot chick at a club. You're going to go back with her. She's going to pull her van over and overpower you and force you to have sex with her.
Even if that, as much as you might wish for that.
Even if that did happen, what could be the worst that could happen, right? So as a guy, if they recognize you, they don't even have to really be attracted to you. Right. They can just be like, this guy's not going to try to stab me. Or maybe he will, and I'll be rich.
But I think there's part of it is their lives are so boring and dull.
When she came out, how was it?
What? I'm sorry. She didn't come out. I was in Wichita Falls, Texas the other day, which is a charming place, and it's very near Archer City, which is where they filmed The Last Picture Show, one of the best movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And I met at the Avis counter as beautiful a woman as I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
It's just unbelievably beautiful, magnificently beautiful. And she was telling me about her life, and it's just not a terribly interesting life, and just the allure of Hollywood or coming to Los Angeles seemed to light up her face.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I mean, to us it's second nature, but if you're in, she's in a small suburb of Wichita Falls, it seems very, very exciting.
See, Adam, you complain about my passion.
Yeah.
Imagine Ben on an MRI scan.
I was about to say that I think Ben is a passionate man.
I think he outpassions me.
Yeah.
Very passionate.
Drew is a passionate man as well. And this is another interesting topic, which is here's what I think. I think people think the higher the person's sort of intellect is, the lower their passion is.
Yeah, absolutely
and then,
not true.
Not true at all, obviously. And the more you are, the closer you are to an animal, the closer you are to passionate. Uh-huh. I think that's true in an aggressive standpoint,
yes.
But not when it comes to the ladies. You know what I mean? Like, a guy who has a very low IQ is much more apt to get into a fight with someone and keep kicking them after they're passed out.
Right.
But he's not more apt to be more passionate than a guy with a high intellect. And I think when they see guys that are sort of buttoned down, they see guys that are smart, professors and lawyers and doctors, they just think, he's not as passionate as the construction worker or the fireman or the cop or whatever. The reality is, Drew is an exquisitely passionate man, and I now see that Ben Stein is as well.
I'm very passionate. I'm very passionate, especially about my dogs.
No.
Oh, I met his dogs tonight.
The dogs,
oh, really?
The dogs are magnificent.
And
the dogs
Dalmatian.
Half Dalmatian, half Whippet. The dogs are as wonderful as any creatures on God's earth, except my wife.
Right.
And my son, who's also wonderful.
Now you see, I think that's... I go through my life sort of complaining about people and wondering why stuff I have isn't better.
Yeah.
I think it's a much better angle, a much better tack to take, like Ben, which is, I have the greatest dogs in the world, I have the greatest wife in the world. See, I go through life going, Ben's got the greatest dog, he's got the greatest wife, I have a worse dog, I have a horrible wife.
You have one of the most beautiful wives in the world.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have a dog?
I have a beautiful dog now, too, but not as good as your dog.
I'm
That's
sure your dogs
point.
Are every bit as beautiful. You know what happiness is? Happiness is being grateful for what you have.
Yes.
And having an attitude of gratitude instead of an attitude of envy. That's happiness. You have an unbelievable life. You're unbelievably highly paid.
Yes.
You're very successful. You get to showcase your intellect all the time. Also all true of Dr. Drew. You're a very, very lucky guy. There are 8 billion people in the world.
I know.
How many people do you think get to live like you two? A couple of hundred thousand in the whole world.
I know. We have to kill them. That's my point.
No.
So that we can be truly at peace and happy.
No.
There'll be no envy, though.
All right. The point is Ben is a passionate man.
And
a grateful man. And when I say passion, I don't necessarily just mean about as a dog lover. But Drew, passionate for the ladies, and now for one lucky lady. And Ben, passionate for the ladies, and now one lucky lady as well. Yes?
Well, I'd say more for the dogs, really.
Okay.
I mean, I love my wife beyond possibility of explaining, but the dogs, well... The dogs.
No, I understand.
That we can't even touch.
No, I mean... The
well, I don't have sex with the dogs, but,
no.
But the dogs are... perfect peace.
Transcendent.
The perfect moment in my life is in the afternoons, sometimes, if I'm in town, my wife and I will take a nap with the dogs.
Really?
And we have this beautiful house overlooking our pool in our house, and there we are with the dogs and the wind blowing through the windows. It's just perfection. It's all right there.
I don't, I'm a napping guy. I love to take a nap, but I'm a solo napper.
You have to masturbate before you nap. That may kind of... narrow it down for you.
No, I don't always do that, Drew.
What?
Yeah, I didn't do it once.
Oh, okay.
Remember that one time I told
you
I didn't do it?
That. Yeah, I
that was 94 Quake. Remember that?
Yeah. Got it.
The point is, I don't mind napping with my wife, but it feels weird.
Huh.
I feel like somebody, it's 4 p.m. Somebody needs to be pacing up and down the hall.
Patrolling.
I need a nap. Like, half of my pleasure of napping is everyone else is up. I like to think I'm the only guy sleeping, and there's something that feels sort of good about it. Like, I'm taking a nap. You guys can all push your pencils or do whatever you got to do, dig your ditches. I'm going to take a nap. And when someone else is napping with me, it sort of bursts that bubble, yes.
But my wife is usually reading, and then she takes a nap.
Oh, okay. That's how she's up.
It's fabulous to do that.
All right, well, Ben, we're going to nap sometime.
Okay.
We'll take a call before we...
We'll take a call. All right, we'll take one call.
All right.
Amanda?
Hey.
You're 21?
I am 21.
What's up?
Well, my boyfriend has a problem getting and maintaining erections.
How old is he?
He's 21.
Oof.
Mm-hmm.
Is he on any medication?
No, he's not. He told me that he has a low testosterone level.
Huh. Did he have an undescended testy or something when he was growing up?
I don't think so.
Why would he have a low testosterone level?
I think that was just an estimate that he gave me. I think that was just like his diagnosis, his personal diagnosis. But I know that he's never like been...
Does he have normal body hair, normal musculature, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
I'd say a rather common problem that people don't think about is prolactin-secreting tumors, and they're relatively common, and they can profoundly lower the testosterone level in males. Somebody his age that really has erectile problems primarily in terms of getting started, it makes you think medical or medication or substances.
Yeah, 21-year-old guys.
Well, I would like to, may I offer a comment?
Sure.
I think we should ask her what she does to stimulate him and whether she is doing adequately sophisticated and caring work to stimulate him and to do this. Because except for the most savage beasts, I don't think men can be expected to get erections without being stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
So what is she doing? What is her part in this drama?
Drew is a man of passion, begs to differ.
Ben, talking about the Avis... person.
Right. Gave Drew a little rise. Amanda?
Uh-huh.
Are you doing things for him?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The reason I called is because I didn't know if there was something like elk or something special that I could be doing.
Here's the thing. I agree with Drew. 21-year-old guys, when a woman is naked in the room they're in and it's that time of the night, Shouldn't have any difficulty in the erectile
department. Yeah, you see, it's one thing if they start having sex and lose the erection or have difficulty with penetration. That happens when people are anxious and have interpersonal issues, and even then some medical issues can. But to have initially unable to get an erection, that's... Huh.
Well, I used to say to a person very close to me who had... Now, I hope this isn't going to...
This won't go on the radio, don't worry. Okay. Now.
That there is no such thing as a problem of this kind that cannot be solved by a sufficiently, what shall I say?
Skilled
woman.
Yes. Yeah. Professional woman or just
any woman who has sufficient motivation and concentration. Mm-hmm. Because now, I would like to ask, I would go back to this woman, I would say, well, are you fully concentrating on helping him get an erection?
I will let you do that, but let me make one point. That there's some studies just came out showing that sexual dysfunction is oftentimes a presenting symptom of more serious medical problems. People, before they have a heart attack, usually have difficulty with erectile function before
pain in my arm.
He's not having erectile dysfunction. In 21-year-olds, endocrinological problems, like prolactin tumors.
You can't get a boner at 21. You're praying you have a heart attack.
Lord.
Take me. You're like Fred Sanford.
But people don't think about these things. They got to think about it because they need to be intervened sometimes. All anyway, right. So let's see what Amanda's role in this is.
Well,
Ben must ask her.
I love to agree with Ben. He's a genius and everything, but the guy has a 21-year-old penis. Ben, you're thinking like a 55-year-old penis.
I'm 60.
A 6-year-old. I know, but you're thinking like a 55-year-old penis. I deducted 5.
I thought you said 60.
Your scrotum's youthful appearance. All I'm saying, the thing that's funny about the sack, the thing I love about the sack, as someone pointed out to me, I was saying the other night, first off, no difference in Leonardo DiCaprio or Brad Pitt's sack versus a salty sea captain sack. Both, all three as attractive as the next. So that's nice to know that no matter how beautiful a man is, his sack has nothing on yours, number one. But number two, it's so bad it doesn't even get worse with time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It can't be made worse.
65-year-old sack, no different than a 15-year-old sack. They're all disaster. Few more gray pubes, maybe.
You know what that reminds me of? I was listening to you once about a year ago, and you were talking. Some guy was on the air with you talking about going down on a woman, and you said, it's a train wreck down there. I laughed so hard, I think I had to pull off the PCH to keep from crashing.
We should get, thank you, we should get, women get credit for doing that to us. We don't get nearly the credit I think we deserve for doing it
to
them.
For oral sex.
Yes. Yes.
You don't think?
Well, they like it, and they sometimes will complain if we do or they we don't, but guys don't get any credit for it.
I mean,
it's a sexual act, and therefore it's covered under this umbrella of you love sex.
Right.
We do love sex, but it's like saying you love food. You don't love giblets.
Well, Adam went down this. Absolutely.
He went
down this path once before. He goes, look, which would you rather do? Would you rather eat a churro or an abalone?
Yeah.
You get more credit. You can't put your face in the abalone than eating the churro, right?
Yeah, I'm saying give the guy credit for eating the churro right out of the eating the abalone right out of the shell.
Suck on a finger or suck on an open wound.
Thank you. That's right.
That's you, Cole. That's what you said.
Yeah, thank you. Ben Stein here, everybody. Son of the Mask, bring the kids, everybody. It's coming out on the 18th of February. Take a quick break. Be right back after this. Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. The great mind of Ben Stein here tonight, soon to be seen in Son of the Mask out on February 18th. Our dear friend Jamie Kennedy is also in that.
Did you work with Jamie?
No. I'm eating a piece of pizza. I work with Alan Cumming, the villain.
Mm. And he was... He treated Ben rudely in the beginning of the movie. We can't give too much.
He did something very mean to
awful
me.
Time.
Very mean.
Ben is always active in politics and always has been. Certainly, probably less active now than he was when he was writing speeches for Nixon and Ford. and I know we always seem to get into this, but we don't have too many people that know too much about anything, really, on this show. So I'm always...
Well, you do know a hell of a lot.
Well, we have instincts, but we don't actually have information, unless it's about woodworking or...
heart disease.
Or medicine.
Sawing...
trivial subject,
right,
like medicine.
Sawing wood or bones, we're fine at, but other stuff like politics, we just have our instincts. But what is your take on Iraq? We always talk about it. What do you think? What do you think the plan is? Do you think the elections went well? Do you think it's good?
All right, I'm going to say, first of all, I am asked all the time, because I live and work in Hollywood, what do I think about the fact that all the stars like Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon and Robert Redford are on the other side of the fence politically from me and from Mr. Bush? What do I think about that, especially about the Iraq War? And I always say, those people are not real stars. A man is not a star if he gets paid $20 million to read lines in front of a camera that somebody else has written. The real stars are the guys in the 1st Air Cavalry Division in Baghdad and the Marines in Fallujah who risk their lives, lose their lives sometimes to fight the terrorists. Those are the real stars, and they're amazing stars. So that's one thing. They're real, real stars. They light up the night. Second thing, I am friends with this wonderful guy from the 1st Air Cav, 2nd Brigade, 2nd Battalion, 7th Brigade. He tells me that some of the Iraqi National Guard are the bravest guys he's ever seen in his life. Hmm. They're amazingly capable. They'll stand up toe-to-toe against the terrorists and shoot it out with them, even when the Americans are diving for cover. And he says many of them are inspiringly brave, well-behaving, clever guys. Some are terrible derelicts. But he says there are enough of them who are good guys that he thinks they're going to be able to put something together. He's there every day going out on patrol, every day dodging IEDs and rocket-propelled grenades and sniper fire. If he thinks that there's hope, I think there must be some hope.
And you think it was the right thing?
I don't know. It turns out Saddam Hussein was not as bad a threat as we thought. But, you know, Mr. Bush said something very smart about it. He said Saddam Hussein was the most dangerous man in the world in the most dangerous place in the world. So probably better that he's gone. And I think the fact, look, Iraq had a higher voter turnout with people threatening to kill the voters than we have with Puff Diddy begging people to vote.
Yeah, so, well, begging, so, threatening.
He's going to kill them if they don't.
Yeah. No, he was begging them to vote. So I think there's some deep current of human nature that wants democracy, and I think the president is going to turn out to have done the right thing here.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be that much. You know, sometimes you just go back and think about something like the Berlin Wall, and you think, man, that went on until, like, I don't know, 89 or whatever, whenever it was.
We never thought it would come down.
You never thought it would come down, but then when you go back and look at it, that it was up for 40-something years, you think, what the hell was it doing up, you know, a wall, literally a wall with guards stationed on it going through the center of a city? I mean, ridiculous at that. Then, of course, the second it went down, immediately nobody from west went east, everyone from east went west, and then everything turned out fine. I mean, you look back on these things historically and you realize it's just a better government, a democracy.
There is something about democracy that's very close to people's heart. People don't like being pushed around.
What did Churchill say? It's the worst form of government except for all the rest.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Listen, everyone thinks this country's a bully, I'm like, listen, if we were a bully, we would have just blown Cuba out of the water as soon as Russia fell out of the game. I mean, I still would like to just go throw Fidel into the ocean. But the fact that they're giving us a Suris for 50 years, and now their big brother has been thrown out of the high school, and there's no one to protect them anymore, meaning the Soviet Union, and we just sort of let him ride things out over there, means, of course, we're ambivalent.
We're not bullies. It's like what Colin Powell said. We fought two world wars to protect the West and to save democracy, and all we asked for was enough space to bury our dead. I mean, that's no other country in the world's ever done anything like that.
Well, here's the bottom line. All you a-holes out there who talk smack about your beloved country, first off, just do the math in terms of where do people flee. They flee to this country, number one. Number two, If you were in a war and you became a prisoner of war, who would you like to be? Who would like to be your captors? Huh? Japan? World War II?
Yeah, exactly.
How about Japan? How about your? Oh, they do think they're great. They care about the elderly over there. They have their. They have the medicine. They have the. They have
medicine, the
holistic
ages,
medicine. Yeah. You want those guys? They'll put you in a diaper, give you 3 grains of rice, and beat the crap out of you while you build some bridge to nowhere. Yeah, just think about the countries you would like to be captured by. Because by the way, that's how you judge a country.
That's
not
a very good
not
point.
How they treat their elite, the rich, or even their citizens. How do they treat people they don't have to treat well? Every other country, you get turned into a drone ant. They just work you until they die. They don't bother wasting any food or medical help on you. They just work you. You fall over, you die. They roll you off the side of the road, and they put the next guy in your place. That's it. This country is pretty decent to people we capture. Yeah, sure, we toss them in a pyramid every once in a while, but that's essentially, that's fraternity hazing business. The stuff other countries do is about beheading, working to death, torturing, and killing.
Oh, well, when we captured the German prisoners in World War II, we brought them to America, and they lived better than they lived in Germany. I mean, they were living unbelievably well. Many of them came back here after the war.
I'm just saying, you think we're a bad country? Who do you want to get captured by in a war? And who do you want to lose to in a war? Think about that. Yeah, think about if Germany, or Japan, or Italy, any of these countries have ever done any battle with. Imagine if they just had won. You think we'd keep your house, keep your name, keep your flag? Huh? Well,
Drew and I would be dead.
Keep your language?
Yeah, people of different ethnicities would be in big trouble.
Yeah. Well, Drew's half Jew. He'd be half dead. I'd just split you down the middle.
But he's already
Chris. And you're Chris.
Chris.
Get over.
Yeah. Chris, I think they'd take pity on him.
He got some Italian in him, so I guess.
I think they'd use
him. One drop of Jewish blood, you're dead.
One drop? All right. Me, because of my voice and respect I have in the community, they would use for propaganda. I would just be up there speaking German, screaming at everyone to get in line.
A loudspeaker.
Yeah. I'd be driving around.
Everybody listen to me.
I'd be driving a VW thing with a big loudspeaker on it. Like, get in line and pay attention. Kara?
Yes.
You're 23?
Yes.
What's up?
Recently I've been having sexual dreams about women.
Yeah.
And I'm straight and I'm in a happy relationship and I don't really understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else changing? Any new birth control pills or anything funny going on?
Nope.
And have you ever had feelings towards women before?
I've made out with girls and...
Was that to impress guys? A lot of girls do that these days.
No, this was, like, in high school, I was experimenting.
So you weren't trying to impress guys, you were interested in girls.
Why do you say you're straight?
Huh?
Well, you've made out with girls.
You've declared your major, though.
I've like, gone south of the border.
Were you sexually abused growing up? Anybody?
No.
Any experimentation with kids of other girls or kids your own age when you were a little kid?
No.
It's Drew. Once in a while,
I know. Yeah,
me and one of my buddies would have to make out to turn a chick on.
What?
You know what I mean?
I don't believe that.
Yeah,
turns
it works. It's a two-way street, Ben. It works the same way. Our sexuality is no different than theirs.
But think about how our brains work. We just went through a whole litany of discussion about a girl doing this. Like, okay, and then Adam suggested he might have done it. I was like, oh, my God,
because, of course, it's a turn-on to have two girls make out. It's not a turn-on to me to have two guys make out. But, I mean, that's
you need to talk to him about the porn, going through the porn store and coming upon the gay pornography.
Well, that's an interesting thing,
Ben. All right, talk to me about that.
Here's another theory I have. Controversial, yes, but I think you'll agree with me, which is, you know, everyone, and again, we all hate these Hollywood lefty types who basically try to convince everyone that, you know, the only difference between men and women is like this indoctrination that the man gives the boy a truck and a gun and he gives the girl a dolly and forces us into our gender differences and all this kind of BS. And the fact that guys sort of have this aversion to gay pornography, I mean, like, when you see graphic gay erotica, you have to avert your gaze. You have to put your hand over your face and sort of turn. Is it like when you're flipping through and you see you're flipping through the stations, you get to TLC and Hugh Downs is getting a knee replacement and the guy's got the cold chisel out. It's like you're like, oh no. I mean, it's that kind of thing where it's like, I can't look at this. And I was saying to Drew a couple things. One there really should be more gay bashing going on, considering the visceral reaction that most men have to gay sex. You know what I mean? I shouldn't say we need more of it.
But it's amazing. It's nice that there isn't more.
Yes, that if you took 100 heterosexual guys, showed them graphic depictions of gay pornography, every one of them would have to sort of turn away or say, like, I'm going to vomit. The fact that half of one of those guys actually goes out and smacks somebody,
you know,
is a low percentage for a bunch of guys who are going to vomit.
I'll tell you more about this.
That's another very shrewd. I'm
doing this Discovery Health show, and it's about sexual behaviors and whatnot. And I went down to Emory, and we were studying functional MRIs of men versus women looking at erotic material. And obviously the differences in the brain response are profoundly different. But one of the things they show you, I actually did it myself, got in the scanner, and one of the things they show you is male erotica too. And your brain.
What did they show you, by the way?
They showed you just guys chubbed up, standing there, you know, looking.
What
kind
does
of,
chubbed up mean?
With erections.
Show them. But not actually doing anything.
No, but interestingly, my brain and this other guy's brain, who was in the scanner with that subsequently, showed threat and then rage. Rage
really?
And threat areas. Isn't that interesting?
Raging boner or just raging anger?
Just rage.
But I think that has to do...
The threat, I thought, isn't that interesting? You're threatened by... Yeah, it's novelty, threat, and then anger.
But those that has to do...
And yeah. I'm not even aware that I had that reaction.
I think that has to do partly with fear of one's own feelings.
Mm-hmm. I looked at it, I thought...
Hold on, let it in, Drew.
No, I'm letting... let me think here.
I mean, I
examined myself. I watched very carefully what happened to me during the scan, and I got kind of like... Oh, jeez. Get back the girls again. Come on.
I agree. But I think, first of all, your point is very shrewd. But something is going on because it is. I find the idea of a guy putting his thing in another guy's anus horrifying.
Right.
But I know some. My best friend is gay, and he's an unbelievably fine human being. So I have to believe that there are some unbelievably fine human beings who do that.
Well, of course.
Because he's an unbelievably fine human being.
But we're talking about primitive biological response that males have.
I am saying when you see depictions of it, and guys, by the way, guys who enjoy, you know, if there's a film, if it's News at 11, where the guy who was on the motorcycle was getting chased by the sheriff's car, went off the overpass and collided with a semi-truck, guys will watch that and play it back 5 times with the TiVo. Those same guys seeing a couple of guys engaging in anal sex have to put their hand up.
I think there are two other phenomena sexually that people respond to, men, with the same exact kind of a feeling. One, imagine your parents having sex.
That's very deep.
And two,
Is it true? Yes.
And two, close but not quite as intense, but very elderly having sex.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Very elderly. I don't have a problem.
How dare you?
But I'm saying people.
Yeah.
I think the best depiction is the parents having sex. That's the one that is the closest to that same kind of feeling, isn't it?
Well, yes. What did Freud say about this, Doctor?
Well, we can talk about it. We got to take a break right now.
He said the greater the wish, the greater the taboo.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right.
Adam, we're going to take a break here. Let's get going, dude.
All right. We'll take a break.
No, I mean, seriously, we're going to have to.
Take a break.
Ben Stein.
We
got to
do something during the break.
Ben Stein. Drew's got to relieve a little pressure. Ben Stein here tonight. The mask, son of the mask. The Mask 2 is going to be out on the 18th of February. We'll take a quick break. Be right back after this. Hey, everybody. It's the Love Line. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Ben Stein here tonight. Got a little movie called Son of the Mask, which is out on February 18th, starring our good friend Jamie Kennedy. And we're just talking during the break, a little more politics while Ben ate some pizza. We're going to the phone call, Stro.
You have 2 minutes for Germany or Florida.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Let's do that. Dante?
How's it going?
Going good. It's time to play Germany or Florida. All bizarre stories emanate from either Germany or Florida. You tell us a story, and then we guess. Is it Germany or Florida? Go ahead. Wow. We got a new theme song. Wow. That sucked. Go ahead, Dante.
That was sweet.
All right.
A romantic night of love set a bed on fire and sent two teenagers to a hospital for treatment of burns and smoke inhalation. A 16-year-old girl took advantage of her mother's being out of town to invite her 18-year-old boyfriend to the family apartment. To enhance the atmosphere, the girl turned out the bedroom lights and placed lighted candles around her bed. As the evening progressed, the bed linens caught fire, and the lover's attempts to stamp out the flames only fanned them. Hurrying to carry a burning downfield duvet to the balcony off the living room, the naked teens managed not only to burn themselves, but also to drop bits of burning feathers and fabric on the hallway and living room furniture along the way, igniting more small fires. The mother arrived to find her bandaged daughter in a hospital and the apartment damaged by fire, smoke, and water.
Germany or Florida?
Wow. I'm going to guess Germany.
I'm thinking Germany, too, and I can't really tell why. Apartment.
Florida, I don't have any real down. It's
No down. Down's
no
Germany.
Down, and also the fact that I think in Europe an awful lot of apartments have balconies.
Balcony, good. And then
Florida's a balcony
in Florida,
city, but
America, you can't leave your 16-year-old home alone.
Hey, look, they don't, their comforters are all polyester, and they don't know what a
duvet.
They think duvet covers.
And
like
what
just
Floridian?
Duvet's a racial slur.
And what Floridian has candles?
It's a good
point.
Oh,
no, they have the scented candles.
In Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it smells.
But I think it sounds German.
Germany. Typhoons blow the power wires down.
Oh, you're right.
We're going Germany. Everyone's going Germany?
Yeah.
We're all going.
Maybe I should go Florida just to be different.
Go Florida. Does this story make it from Germany? Or though maybe with the internet, everything makes it because nothing leaves. We just go there.
Well,
because
people
what I mean?
Look for Germany or Florida on our behalf.
All right.
I'll go Florida.
Ben's going beloved Germany.
Yeah,
I'm going Germany. By the way, I got a theory about giving them another bombing, too, by the way. And I'm going to Germany as well. Drew is going Florida. Dante, is it Germany or Florida?
It is Germany.
Well done. And, you know, thank you, Dante. You'll get nothing. You know, the thing that's weird about Germany or Florida is a couple of teenagers getting it on, a candle starts a fire. All three of us agreed it was Germany. Drew was a big enough man to raise the stakes a little and go Florida. That's good radio, Drew. But the point is why Germany and how come things have their own sort of flavor? And isn't that what makes everyone, human beings a little different than
and
robots?
And you're profiling them again. You're profiling.
Can't
how
profile.
Dare you?
I know,
how
but
dare you? How dare you?
Profiling works.
How dare you? I'm incensed.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about profiling
after
when we
the
come
break.
Back.
We
all right, Ben Stein here tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
No, not all right.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191er. Ben Stein, our guest tonight, son of the mask. Ben, if you wanted to just talk to someone, Ben is one of the best guys to talk to.
Well, God bless you.
Well, he's got, you know, the thing about, nice about Benny is that great intellect, which is fun, too, but
well, God bless you.
He doesn't judge.
Does not judge.
You know what I mean?
Well, you know what they say, no too much to argue or to judge.
Yeah, and the thing about Ben is, he's like that older, you know, he's not your older brother, he's your older brother's friend. He's cool, but he's a good student. He's got it all.
Well, God
really
bless you. I don't really, but God bless you.
Find a beer, bring the pot.
I'm the one who brings the pot. Exactly.
Yeah, maybe writes a term paper for you. Gives you Mickey's big
God.
Mouth.
He's not afraid to profile either.
Yeah.
I used to have these two girls from USC who worked for us. They would be messengers and so forth for my wife and me, and I would write their term papers for them. And
what?
They would. It was just hilarious. Yes.
Yeah.
All the time. I'm still very close friends. One of them married a really, really successful real estate developer, and she lives like a queen down in Balboa.
Yeah, she didn't need those term papers.
You're right. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, you know, guy was writing speeches for Nixon and Ford. Be a pretty good guy to go ahead and put
sure, why not?
Do your term paper for
Turn
you.
A couple phrases for you.
Yeah. We were talking right before we went to break about profiling and how that's turned into a bad thing. I happen to like profiling. I like all forms of profiling.
Listen, that's what medicine is. It's basically profiling.
Absolutely. That's what science is.
Yeah.
That's what science is noticing certain phenomena connected with other phenomena. I mean, that's
And your brain
science.
Makes patterns out of them, and you recognize the patterns
Absolutely.
When you see them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's all really, as an organism, it's one of our oldest instincts.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's the profiling between the dog that's wagging its tail and looking friendly and the dog that looks a little dicey and looks like it might take a piece out of your calf. You know
right.
what I mean? That's all you do. Now, does that mean this? Like, it's like, look, you see, first off, there's this whole thing, like, profiling has turned into sort of a bad word. I want people to profile. The FBI, they have profilers. When a kid gets abducted, they bring in the profiler. They all just don't start running in different directions.
Random.
Yeah, randomly. Well, it could be an Asian woman in her 80s. It could be an American Indian man.
Could be an infant.
Could be another infant that abducted the infant. No, they know it's a white guy.
And in the neighborhood.
And they know he's in the neighborhood, and they know he had some relationship with the child, and they know he's between, 34 and 46 years of age, and he has a family, and he has a stable job, and blah, blah, blah. They know all these things, and that's where they begin looking, and the reason they look there is because 90% of the time it's true.
Yeah, well, that's why we had 9/11, was because people were opposed to profiling.
Yes, and now the pussies over at the ACLU are, like, suing Logan Airport because there's profiling. And here's the part. Here's all I want. I'm just tired. There's always going to be the ACLU pussies complaining about everything, wanting to get the cross off the crest, wanting to do all, they don't want death row inmates to submit DNA samples. They're just lefty pussies that are angry at their gay parents. I understand that. But here's the thing. Let's not cave into the retarded pussy pressure. When they say, we're accusing you airport security members of profiling. Oh, no, we weren't profiling. Yeah, we were profiling you.
Shut up.
Keep your gay ass from blowing up next time it's on the plane. All right? So shut your pie hole and get back to hating your stepdad who molested you in the basement. Would you? Let's take that rage and go ahead. Why don't you hang out with your PETA buddies and take that rage that's meant for your parents and just steer it at your parents and stop steering it at society. Let us do our job. You do your job. You go feng shui apartments in West L.A. We'll take care of the terrorists. Okay, you wusses? Please. Go get in your goddamn hybrids and head off to your take a me day, would you? Let us handle the profiling. And yes, it is profiling. And believe me, that's what we do, and that's what we should be doing. And making people scared to profile, police people profile. And I don't care what I don't. And by the way, why is it okay? Why is it FBI profiler who's going to try to find an abducted child? Oh, that's good. That's good profiling. Yeah. You profiling terrorists at the airport? Oh no, that's bad profiling.
That's where we draw the line.
No, that's just it's all profiling.
Well,
that's
what they say. Have you seen the little piggies? It's all political piggies. I mean, it has to do with who has political power in the society. If people are courting the Arab American vote, they don't want to do profiling. If they're courting the African American vote, they don't want to do profiling. But profiling has real value. I mean, I think it's very, very silly not to use profiling, and it's not aimed at insulting any group. It's just aimed at preventing crime.
Yeah, and by the way, when it comes to, as the aforementioned, child abduction, they don't go looking for Arab guys. They go looking for white guys in a certain age range. We earn that right to be profiled, unfortunately, by having almost exclusively white guys in this age range doing the abductions. That's all it is. You go ahead and do the lion's share of whatever kind of crime you're doing, and you get to the top of that crime's profile list. That's the way it works.
Can I point out something about profiling ethnicity? This is kind of interesting. At least I think it is. It might not be. I was host of one of the inaugural balls. There were 8 inaugural balls.
Oh, you were?
And I was host of one of them.
You didn't invite us.
Well, if I'm host next time when Jeb Bush wins, or Mr. Giuliani wins, I will invite you.
Giuliani?
Yeah, I think he'll probably be the candidate. Either he or Jeb Bush.
And you get behind Giuliani?
I love him. I love him. I think he's fabulous. But anyway, so...
How about his buddy with the bald head?
Yeah, what's his name? Cervix or something like that? Kurchik or something.
Right.
I forget his name.
Kurt.
Anyway, I went to this ball. Very, very lavish thing. Lots and lots of very, very rich people. People so rich that they make Adam and you look poor, Drew.
Yeah, I mean, I'm literally a millionaire, Ben, but not a multi-millionaire.
Yes, these are billionaires. I mean, we were sitting in a part of the room where it was all billionaires.
Billionaires, like $10 million.
All right. Mm-hmm. So at this party, we notice almost no African-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's fine. You have to pay tickets. People are allowed to come. Nobody's discriminating us. We go to the party after that that was called the Red, White, and Blue Heroes Ball, which is all servicemen wounded and maimed in Iraq and Afghanistan. There are a lot of African-Americans.
Uh-huh.
A lot of African-Americans who fought and lost their legs or lost their eyesight or lost their ability to move. That's the only party I went to at the inauguration that had a lot of African-Americans, and that sort of broke my heart.
Yeah, it would be nice if more white guys got wounded. I agree.
No, I mean, it would be
nice. Oh, you want black guys at the rich party. I see.
No, it would be just nicer if there's some... What I find amazing is that black guys, especially ones who are like now in their 70s or 80s, went off to fight in World War II or Korea or Vietnam. When they came back, they were very badly mistreated. I spend some Saturdays and Sundays over at the VA hospital in Westwood.
Really?
Yes. I go over there and I bring them presents and treats and I bring pretty girls to meet them and so forth. And there are a lot of black guys there in that veterans hospital who came from small towns in Alabama or Georgia or Mississippi and fought in the Army and were wounded in the Army and still are carrying those wounds. And I think to myself, they left the segregated society and went off and fought for this country and lost their lives, lost their mobility. And it's pretty goddamn impressive. It really, really is. I mean, you really tear up when you see them.
Yeah. And
how do you think we ought to improve this situation?
The situation has improved unbelievably.
It's improving by itself.
It's improved incredibly. I mean, look, you guys are young. How old are you, Dr. Drew?
46.
Okay, I'm 60. Adam, you, I guess, would be about 39?
40.
You're 40, okay. Pretty close. When I was a child growing up in Washington, D.C., not Mississippi, not Alabama, Washington, D.C.
Our nation's capital
of the nation, as I like to say. In the Washington Post, big liberal newspaper, classified ads used to say, help wanted colored, help wanted white. Apartments colored, apartments white. Residential neighborhoods, real estate for sale, colored real estate for sale, white. That they would say in the ads, if a neighborhood was restricted against Jews, it would say, convenient to churches. That meant Jews, don't bother even looking at the house, you can't buy it. That was in Washington, D.C. when I was growing up. I'm not that old. It wasn't that long ago. I went to high school, to an elementary school, and part of my time in junior high school, racially segregated by law. The society has changed completely.
Right.
Completely. It's a miracle how it's changed.
And was it tough being a Jew in that environment?
It was fairly tough. I mean, I lived in a fairly affluent neighborhood, and so that part wasn't bad. But there were kids who would call me an effing Jew, and we would have fights. And it makes me think of you and Jimmy. This was in junior high in particular, and I started lifting weights and got very, very strong, and they stopped picking on me. I was about the strongest white guy in the class by ninth grade.
Really?
And they stopped picking on me. A very, very good lesson. But when I was in, eighth grade, I had a project for one of my classes, pick an occupation and write about why you'd like to be in that occupation. So my father was a super smart guy. I said to him, I think I'd like to work in advertising. Could you help me write a little paper about what it's like in Madison Avenue? He said, well, you're not going to work in advertising. The big agencies don't take Jews.
Wow.
Okay, so that was 1958. Now they're largely Jewish, largely Italian. I said, I love cars. Maybe I could work at General Motors or Ford. My father was friends with the chairman of General Motors. I said, maybe I could work at General Motors. General Motors doesn't take Jews. Well, that was not that long ago.
Right.
I said, all right, how about, I said, I like banks because it's real clean and neat and it's not dirty.
Well, there you go.
No Jews
in the banks?
Commercial banks didn't take Jews.
Wow.
Some investment banks did. Commercial banks didn't take Jews. Okay, that's totally changed. It's all open to everyone now. It's a miracle now.
Wow. Wow.
It's a whole different world.
Yes. You can't not be a banker if you're Jewish now.
No, no,
you
no.
Know
no.
That?
Yeah, right.
You know
that? I did know
you
that.
You can do anything now. Anybody can
point.
Do anything now.
Yeah, that's my point. And I know, look, things still exist, some obstacles. I'll tell you the biggest obstacle, really, though, whatever color your skin is or whatever your religion is, being ugly, bigger obstacle than anything, being fat, bigger obstacle, and being poor.
Being poor is an incredible obstacle.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It sucks to be poor.
Yes, and just being, and they've done plenty of tests with this, just being flat out unattractive. I mean, I've said this many times. My friends, single ones, that is, and Ben, would date just about any would date any ethnicity as long as it was a beautiful woman.
Right.
Who they would not date is a fat chick. So you got a fat white chick versus a beautiful Nubian princess. They're going right after
right.
the black chick.
Oh, absolutely.
They're going after the Asian chick. They're going after the Hispanic. They're going whoever, just not the fat white
chick. But let's not get down to it.
Thank
Isn't
you.
That a form of profiling? Because is it not true that, A, it's just basically unattractive to see somebody who's really grossly obese, but, two, that there's something very often wrong with people in the head who are grossly obese. It's not just that they're grossly obese and that's not particularly attractive, but they don't tend to be quite right in the head.
Right.
Well, there is people that are trauma survivors sometimes literally push people away by filling a large space and keeping people at a distance.
I think that's a very good point.
And there is
I better put away my piece of pizza.
And there are genetic. There are genetic heritages. I mean, really what men are attracted to is health. That's really, you know, symmetry and the skin coloration and hair. That's all about, you know, being attracted to those, collecting those genes. And so somebody who may have a genetic problem with weight would be less attractive to many men.
Well, the symmetry part, I think, is amazing. I mean, if you see a woman who has regular, perfect, symmetrical features, it is such an incredible turn on. I mean, I offer, because you showed me the picture of your wife before we went on the air. I've seen Adam's incredibly beautiful wife a number of times. My wife has perfectly symmetrical features. I mean, men love women with symmetrical features. There has to be something primal in the human brain saying they're going to give us better children.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for fertility and genes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just looking for a better BJ.
I know.
I don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, you're just getting back to basics.
Gabby?
Wait, guys, I hate to interrupt here.
Yes.
But apparently we still have like large problems with housing discrimination, according to our PSA that we play every night.
Oh yeah, this is our favorite PSA. Ben, you didn't think the kind of housing discrimination still went on that goes on out there? But listen to this public service announcement they play on this show regularly. Play it, Anderson.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello. Can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Sounded Indian
Hello?
At the beginning.
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
Every day. Yeah.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available
now. Can't rent an apartment.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Here comes the man.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about
Graham
the apartment
Wellington.
On Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal.
So there it's illegal.
There we
go. Anyone who lives in Los Angeles knows Mexicans can't get apartments.
That's hilarious.
It's impossible.
That's hilarious. I live in one of the... Well, I mean, I'm sure it's very modest compared to your house, but I live in one of the very nicest parts of Beverly Hills. There's every kind of ethnicity imaginable in my neighborhood.
Listen, imagine a Mexican or a black guy or an Indian trying to live in an apartment here in Los Angeles.
Impossible.
Yes.
Impossible. No
They're forced to live in large manors.
In the street.
In the street,
right,
I mean.
Street.
Yes.
Or in the woods.
Can't be
in
done.
In the desert.
Go.
I have a house out in Malibu. I mean, it's like a rainbow out there on my street. It's every kind of color you can imagine.
They're trying to rent a space. They're going to rent it to anybody as long as they're not going to destroy it. That's
Look, here's the bottom line. There's a lot of people get a lot of mileage out of basically cultivating this racism thing, which exists, but not to the point that they'd like to make it seem. It's sort of it's a business for them, and then they go ahead, I believe, and run this kind of crap, which just pisses off all the people that are depicted in it and makes them falsely think that we're living in a more racist environment than we actually are.
I love your saying that, because this was my main gripe against Al Gore in 2000, is when he was running, he was whipping up minorities and telling them they were being discriminated against. And when people would say to him, well, give us some concrete, specific examples, he would say, oh, it's just in the air. It's so deeply ingrained. You don't need examples. It's just all over. It's in the psyche of the white man. And if you can't see it and can't smell it and touch it, it's not there. It's just not happening. And whatever is there compared to what was there a generation or two generations ago is nil.
You know, my kids. And furthermore, hold on. You know, when Kerry gave his consent concession speech. He did that BS, but don't worry. By the way, I always like this part where you make your concession speech, you just got whooped, and your speech is, don't worry, I'm still on the job. It's like, look, buddy, you lost. The game's over. How about hitting the showers and getting out of our face because we're tired of looking at your pie hole? And I was like, don't worry, I'm still on a job. What job, by the way? Don't have it. You're out.
Senator.
But the point is it's like as if he's running the country.
Right,
and he's
right.
Like, anywhere there's a farmer that needs help, anywhere. And then he does this whole thing. There's a mother who can't get welfare for anywhere. There's a person of color that wonders why they're being treated differently. It's like, really? You got to shake that whole racist snow globe up again, you old F. It's not going on. Yeah, it exists. It exists again, fat people, poor people, ugly people, short people. There's a form of sort of ism for just about everything. Let's face it, but go out, work hard, make some money. Don't screw over anyone, and you'll be fine in the society we have built, by the way. Why do we have to keep whipping that horse?
Because there's votes in it, and there's votes in stimulating people's paranoia. And there are a lot of people who cannot take responsibility for their own failures in life and would like to blame somebody else for it or blame racism for it. I mean, you know, I am the father of a very, very sweet teenage child, and I hear him and his teenage friends talking all the time. It's very easy for them to place blame for things on their parents, place blame for things on the schools. It's not easy for them to accept blame for themselves. That's a teenager, and that's fine. I mean, he's a wonderful kid, and I love him. But for an adult, the age of Carrie to be doing that is ridiculous.
The other thing, the generation's coming up, your kids, your child's age, and my kid's age.
Well, your kids are quite a bit younger.
Well, they're 12, 13.
Oh, okay.
But the idea of race it's almost going away for them. Listen.
Not sure about that.
But listen, they don't say this is that kind of person. They say, well, he's got kind of brown skin, and he's got kind of curly hair.
I don't think so.
That's the way my kids and their friends
are. Your kids are a little different.
Let him spend a weekend with Uncle Adam. I'll straighten him out.
Yeah, let him spend a weekend with Tommy Stein and his friends because they notice people's ethnicity very,
I do flashcards.
Really?
I do flashcards with my nephews. Give him a quick Mexican flash, black guy. I'll just keep flashing.
But Tommy doesn't discriminate against him. I mean, he has friends of every ethnicity, but believe me, he notices their ethnicity. He especially notices people from Middle Eastern ethnicity and has very strong feelings about them.
Oh, profile.
Really? Is that that's growing up in this world
profiling
climate kind of thing? Or?
No, it's growing up in Beverly Hills.
Oh. All right. Well, there you go. And let me just say one more thing before we get off this topic, go back to whatever calls we might take tonight. The whole part where we have to sort of pay the price or make amends for what our forefathers did in terms of plantations and slaves and whatever, Japanese internment camps and all this kind of stuff. By the way, rounding up the Japanese, putting them somewhere for a couple of years and then letting them go, not a great thing. Go on the Bataan Death March. See which one you'd rather do.
Or the rape of Nanking.
Yeah, there's another good one. The point is, I have two nephews, both born, both German. I mean, their fathers from Germany. Should they be held responsible for what went on in World War II?
Those kids? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's my point.
Your nephews? Oh, yeah.
My wife, both her parents were born in Italy. My family, one or two generations back, were born in Italy. We weren't here. We had no plantations. We had no slaves. We had no land. For Christ's sake, my dad doesn't even have any land. I'm the first guy who has any goddamn land in the Corolla families.
In this country, yeah.
Yes, and my wife's parents are from Italy. They're born in Italy. You know, our kid will not have much history on this soil, and just like my nephews. They're German. Their father's from Germany. Should I blame them for what they did to the Jews?
We established that, yes.
Yeah, I know. Let's just look. We weren't here. Most everyone, look around. Los Angeles. These people weren't here. You know what I mean? They couldn't be.
Well, but even
racist.
If their ancestors were there, I mean, it's really just not. There's no sense in blaming a great great grandchild or great great granddaughter for something done by her her ancestors, especially if it was perfectly legal at the time. I mean, slavery was a moral horror show, but it was legal. So anyway.
Yeah. No, look, there's no sense in doing it, but I'm just saying good luck finding. Go ask around. See if you can find one of your buddies who's great, 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 whoever raised tobacco in Kentucky. It's just going to have...
Well, my wife.
Can do it. I can't do it all. Drew's family, all Polacks. Drew, you don't even know where
Russians,
they were.
Russians.
But yeah. My wife's family could drink.
All right. Them. Well, they're good. She should take a... She should take a good racial beating then. Leave me alone. Gabby?
Yeah.
You're 16?
Yeah.
What's up?
I have two questions. One was, I was wondering how Ben Stein got started on the whole acting thing from speech writing. And also, I'll get to the other one later.
Okay, the first answer is, I came out here, I was a screenwriter and a novelist and a producer for a while, and I met a very wonderful man named Michael Chinich, who was a high executive in the casting world. He was a deputy head of production for Universal. He was my friend. He thought I was funny. He put me in a movie called The Wildlife, which was a sequel to Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I had a small part. Nobody noticed it. Then he went to work for John Hughes, and he put me in Ferris Bueller. I ad-libbed those scenes in Ferris Bueller. They were a huge hit and a very successful movie, and I worked consistently after that.
So it was really a Ferris Bueller launching pad.
Right. It was all ad-libbed. Not one word of it was written.
What did they want you to do?
They wanted me to play a teacher. John, you said, I know you're a teacher at Pepperdine in real life, and would you just teach a class about something that's interesting to you? And he was smart enough to know that even with my monotone voice, that even if it was interesting to me, it would come out sounding boring. So that I did that little speech about the supply side economics and voodoo economics. And when the cast and crew applauded when I was done, I thought, oh, because they're so happy to have learned something about economics. But my father saw it. He was a famous economist. He said, oh, my God, you really explained that well. That must be why people like the scene. But anyway, so then I worked on the Wonder Years for 3 years. And then we had the game show. And then I concurrently had the talk show and then Star Search. And now I hardly do any acting, but I do a huge amount of public speaking. And I love doing it.
All right. Good question, Gabby.
She had a second question.
Yeah, but she couldn't come up with it. Gabby, did you come up with your second question?
Yeah.
Ironic if someone named Gabby couldn't come up with their second question.
No,
go ahead.
It was actually for you. Back in the day, when you would come on as a guest speaker as Mr. Bertram on Kevin and Bean.
Mm-hmm.
You came on one day and you were talking about like all the world religions, and you decided to come up with your own called Birchamism.
I did.
I was wondering if you remember any of that.
No.
Damn.
No. Oh, but thanks.
Ask him if he remembers anything you said 25 minutes ago.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember anything I say.
And I just wanted to mention to Ben Stein that Ferris Bueller's Day Off is my favorite movie of all time. So you rule. You are a god in my mind.
Well, God bless you. God bless you. Where do you live, Gabby?
I live in Berkeley, but I used to live in the North Hollywood Van Nuys area.
Oh, well, God bless you. I drove through that today. Adam, I felt so bad for you.
Yeah.
Well, I drove all the way down Lancashire from Sunland.
Should sue my parents.
Oh.
All right, we need to take a break.
Thank you, Gabby.
The great Ben Stein, the inspirational Ben Stein in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Ben Stein, the great mind of Ben Stein, is in here tonight. Son of the Mask, name of his latest movie, which is coming out February 18th. Ben, how many movies have you done, do you know?
About maybe 20.
That's nice.
Maybe 25. And I've done a lot of movies. But nobody asked me much to be in movies anymore. It kind of hurts my feelings, but there it is.
Do they, and it seems, you know, it's not like you're a, blonde starlet or something.
No.
That's not like you.
But I think I'm a character part that they should be able to use to be a teacher or a lawyer or a government official.
That's what I'm saying. You don't hit 40 and the phone stops ringing. You should work well past the grave.
I should work
constantly. Past the grave, I say.
I get it. I get it.
From and past.
I get it. I think I should be working all the time. I do work all the time giving speeches, but I think I should be acting all the time, and I think my agents are very culpable in this respect.
Where do you give speeches?
I give well last
speeches
week,
to his agents about acting.
Last week I spoke in Wichita Falls, Midwestern University, which is a university in Wichita Falls.
So you do the college circuit?
Partly that, and then also to a fundraiser for a drug and alcoholism center in Naples, Florida, called the David Lawrence Center. Incredibly, unbelievably great place. I spent a lot of time at it. I loved it.
Nice.
I'd love to.
Florida's got a lot of good programs.
I love Naples. Have you ever been to Naples?
I've heard of it.
It's fabulous. Have you ever been there, Adam?
Naples, Florida?
Yes.
No.
It's really nice.
See, the way I said that is as if I'd been to Naples, Italy.
You mean Naples?
Naples, Florida. No, have not been.
Naples, Italy?
No.
No. Okay.
Not been. And any place with Naples, anything?
No.
No, not been there. But now, you go out and do the... What, now, who do you speak to when you do the college, or in what topic do you speak on normally?
I usually speak about... I think I'm catching your cough, by the way, Dr. Drew.
I shouldn't be contagious.
Sure. Anyway, I speak about why we should be grateful to be Americans.
Nice.
I speak about how to ruin your life. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book inspired by certain teenagers that I know quite well, mm-hmm. called How to Ruin Your Life. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that. And I talk about how to find yourself and how to avoid addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And how to bring yourself out in life so that you're a happy, grateful, hardworking person.
Ben actually read my book, Adam.
Oh, really?
I read it and reviewed it.
You wrote a book.
Interesting. I wrote a kind review of it.
And I heard you'd written a book.
Businessmen, I'll tell you what I talked to. I talked to a lot of business groups. And what I like to talk about these days is if you watch the news, life in America is unrelievedly bleak, racist, exploitation, gender discrimination, everything bad, the rich screwing the poor. If you watch the commercials, everything's great.
Right.
And I think the commercials have it right. Life in America is effing great. It's absolutely great. And it's incredibly great. Day by day, life on the street in America, at least on my street, is unbelievably great.
In Beverly Hills, everything's great.
It's really, really great.
Right.
Well, look, I didn't always live in Beverly Hills. I did not always live in Beverly Hills. And I lived in a very modest part of Hollywood for quite a long time. And it was great there, too. Life in America is just great. It's
Adam and I talk about this all the time. We sort of were adolescents in the 70s, and as adolescents, you really absorb what's going on in a society, and that seemed like an awful time to be young and be.
Wait a minute. That's when. Then the Wonder Years was going on, was in the early 70s. Those people were very happy.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, but...
Which is real and which is not?
The commercials are real, not the sitcoms.
Here's what I want to say, and look, if you're going to be miserable, you're going to be miserable, rich or poor, black or white.
Boy, are you right.
But I'll tell you, Ben's point of being grateful, people that are grateful are happier mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. You don't think about that part as being a component to happiness. It's a huge component to being happy, mm-hmm. is being grateful and to appreciate your health, your job, your family, whatever. But I said to Drew the last few nights driving home, never better time to be poor than right now in this country.
You're not kidding. Poor in this country is rich compared to anywhere else in the
world. And go to Circuit City, go to the Price Club, see what you can pick a 27-inch flat-screen Sony TV out. I don't mean plasma. I just mean the regular flat box TV, 27-inch, $189. Get the DVD player for $39. Get the surround sound
for another $180. $800. Wait, the minimum wage was $1.65 an hour.
In America, more than 50% of the families are classified as poor have two cars.
Right.
There are almost no families in America that do not have at least two color TVs. There are almost no families in America that do not have air conditioning. There are almost no families in America that do not have indoor plumbing.
Right.
That's pretty amazing. That is an incredible change from even when I was a child. There used to be an African-American neighborhood behind our junior high school. It was just incredible slums, just unbelievable misery. That doesn't exist anymore. I mean, that's just not there.
No, I mean, you're poor now, but you have central air and a DVD player and surround sound and two cars.
Exactly.
All right. How bad can it be? Drew, if that's poor, sign me up. Sign me up. All right, let's keep rocking.
There's 115 minutes on there.
Keep on rocking in the free world.
A 115-minute on hold. Amanda, who's 21. Amanda.
Yes. Hi.
What
Sorry, sorry, Maddie, you called tonight when Adam decided not to take any calls.
Well, Ben stimulates me.
No, that's okay. I'm talking about
with his foot right now.
Yeah, he's working him.
Go ahead.
Well, the reason I'm calling is because my boyfriend of almost 4 years has a pretty bad gambling problem.
Mm.
And it's kind of off and on, and he kind of comes to me when he's ready to be done with it for a while, when he's kind of taken a bad hit, and he's asked me many times, you know, to be there to support him and help him through it and everything, and this actually just happened again recently. I want to know what I can do to help keep him away from that.
Nothing she can do. He has to want to get better. You can refer him to places where he can get help, but you can't change him.
Okay.
It's not going to be about you lassoing him and tying him up, sticking him in the closet. Mm-hmm. That is not going to change his behavior. There are wonderful 12-step meetings out there. You can go to a codependency meeting, and in fact, in my experience, the one thing that seems to have the most significant impact on the identified person turning things around or becoming willing to do change, to engage in a process, is you going to a 12-step meeting, working a codependency program, getting a sponsor, and actually working on your own issues so you don't dance with him and don't sort of engage in this procedure where he goes out and does his thing and you try to control it. That is a dance that will never be successful.
I don't know a lot about gambling. I've learned from our government that gambling is evil, but lottery... That's fine, because that's the ultimate gambling. It's a gambling in its purest expression. There's nobody can win, and there's no chances of anything, and there's zero strategy. I also know that 21 is evil, but Pai Gow Poker, for instance,
that's God's game.
That's fine.
And the slot machines, bad.
Well, betting on, you can't bet on basketball, but betting on horses,
that's okay.
That's fine. So
football?
They said
no.
No, that's bad.
Horses?
For obvious reasons. Horses, yes.
Okay.
It's a very consistent, positive message
logical.
To send. Logical
consistent.
And consistent yep. message. Mm-hmm. Of course. The lottery. Please. When I see and only poor people buy lottery tickets. And
oh, that's not true, Adam. I see a lot of well-to-do people buying lottery tickets.
A handful. For them, it's just...
Get rid of the change.
Yeah, they're just losing change.
Yeah.
For poor people, it's a viable way out in their mind.
Yeah.
And by the way, think about the horrible message that the lottery sends to all the nation's poor who play it every week, which is, you got no shot unless you can line up this 9-digit number. Forget about hard work. Forget about school. Forget about where. You ain't going anywhere. You got one shot. It's one in, 50 million, but you got one shot to get out of this hellhole known as a life. That's what the lottery says.
I don't think it says hellhole known as a life.
Listen, I would love to see some numbers on who plays the lottery consistently. I guarantee it's people living under the poverty line. And I think the lottery is a horrible message that the government sends to its people.
But Amanda, let me get back to the gambling.
I don't care.
Gamblers Anonymous is where he goes. He may well be addicted to other substances. That's commonly an issue with gamblers if he wants to perhaps work on his alcoholism or other issues. I usually think that's a better way to go personally, unless gambling is the pure issue with him and he's never been addicted to another substance.
And gambling will ruin you
just the way heroin can.
I have some friends who are compulsive gamblers who have lost so much, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and talk about ruining relationships and all that great stuff you do when it's drugs, you know, selling the jewelry, breaking in your parents' house, except for in this case, you actually have guys showing up to your house and threatening you, too.
Mm-hmm. You have guys taking your house.
Yeah. You know what? I was just watching, Real Sports at Brian Gumbel's show, and they had a story about a guy who was addicted to gambling, and he had the greatest losing story ever, which was he took a baseball game. He took a Mets playoff game, and he took the over. The over-under was like 8 runs. 8 runs to be scored in this game, and if 8 or more runs cross the plate combined in this game, or one team just scores 10, who cares, he wins his $25,000. If not, he loses. Okay, now it's 3-3. It's in the 15th inning. The bases are loaded. Now, he's got 6 runs. He needs 8 to win his $25,000. The bases are loaded. Now, if the guy hits a double or a single or anything, 1 run crosses the plate, but the game's over. So that's only seven.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that can save him is a home run.
Grand slam, yeah.
Is a grand slam. So, bases loaded, 15th inning. He's got to get eight runs to win $25,000. The guy at the plate hammers a grand slam.
Oh.
He goes out of his mind. He's celebrating. The guy, as he's running down the first baseline, gets mobbed by his teammates.
Oh.
Never turns the corner to go to second. They only count the one run that came in from third.
What?
Yes. The grand slam doesn't count. He never rounded the bases. It was a playoff game, and they mobbed him. The one run's good enough for the win. That umps just call the win, and everyone just sort of piles in. And that's it. His bookie, now he's scored seven runs, not eight.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're like, hey, pay up. Somebody paid on the under. You know what I mean? Someone wants to, we got to pay the guy who bet the under on this game. Imagine that.
That's crazy. That's a good reason not to gamble right there.
You know, I don't think I'm going to be a gambling addict. Just your saying that is giving me cold
sweats. Yeah, me too.
I mean, imagine you see the guy hits the grand slam. You're running around the house like a maniac celebrating. You run back into the room. They show the scoreboard. It's 4-3. And you're screaming. What's going on? Where's the other runs? Imagine that.
I don't like it.
All right. Yeah. Right. Makes me nervous.
Great time.
All right. Ben Stein here tonight. We'll take a quick break. Son of the Mask going to be out on February 18th in theaters near you. We'll take a quick break. Be right back after this.
Thank
hey, everybody. It's Love Line. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew over there. Ben Stein. Money, his friends call him.
No, you're the rich one. You and Dr. Drew and Jimmy are the rich ones. I am the poor cousin.
I'm literally a millionaire. How did it work, by the way, with Ben Stein's money? If you did not, on the rare occasion that you didn't win, and that was very rare.
No, it was about 25% of the time.
All right,
maybe 10%.
I'm calling that rare. What would you walk away with?
In the first season, almost nothing, like maybe $1,500. But in this, by the end of it, maybe $4,000.
Mm. So you got something, but you could double your salary winning.
Yes, that's a good incentive.
And how much, do you know how much they gave away over the
over
$1 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's five.
No, there are six seasons.
Six seasons, but it was $5,000 at a time, right?
Right. And there were, we made a total of about 900 shows.
Oh, my God.
And so it was well over $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You ready to go here, Jeff?
Yeah.
Brett?
Yeah.
You're 18?
Yep.
You want to be a speech writer?
Kind of want to do what you're doing, but, you know, just kind of be a talk show radio guy.
I can see where a Gabby talker like Brett would be.
Yeah.
Interested in
I can't
that sort
believe
of profession.
No one's gobbled you up yet.
That, or maybe an auctioneer. Auctioneer would be another thing you could consider.
What things do you like to talk about, Brett?
Pretty much, like, actually going over everything you guys said.
You got to let him and Brett and Chris do a segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and my roommate were actually just kind of discussing everything you guys were discussing.
Thanks,
kind of going back and forth and something we could do, you know.
Where are you in school?
Oh, my God.
I'm actually not going to school right now. I'm.
Well, right now. Right now is a sort of a clue.
Right now is always a bad sign.
Yeah.
Kind of like what you guys were talking about yesterday. I'm going to go to a junior college.
Oh, boy.
Take some telecom classes.
That is a waste of time.
Why do you say that, Dr.
Junior college. It's a waste. I went to junior college. Look, here's the thing. If you were a decent student, you and the faculty of your high school would have figured it out by about 16 or 17. If you're going to junior college.
I'm a student.
Here's why you're not a good student. You don't like to study.
No.
Reading comprehension skills may not be great. Math skills may not be great. All these things put together create a big ball of bad studentry, and that is you. So why keep this charade going any longer than it should?
Well,
and
what does he do? What does he do, Adam?
He goes to work. He learns how to do something.
Oh.
You know, junior college, it would be essentially, you know what it is? It's like I do really think this is why everyone loves sports. But not love sports, is attracted, intrinsically attracted to sports, because it cuts the fat. I don't care if your dad owns the team, you don't get to play.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what it really doesn't matter who you know, how rich you are, or anything. If you're not good enough to play, you got to go home. And I think people really love knowing that everybody on that field is better than you are. Whereas junior college, it's got the word college in it, yet doesn't matter how bad your grades are. You can stay there for 1,000 years. No one cares. And so it gives people an excuse. It's like, I'm going to college. But they're not college.
Yeah, but wait. But one of my son's very closest friends went to Santa Monica College, which is a junior college. And now he's pre-med and he's a junior at UCLA. He's getting super good grades and he's going to be a doctor. And he's...
What's his ethnicity? I may make an excuse for him.
Jewish.
Jewish? Jewish at junior college. His parents,
he was admitted to UC Santa Cruz, but his parents did not want him going far away from home.
Oh, well, because he'd gotten into trouble.
No, he's a good kid. He's an incredibly good kid. He's the very, very good influence on our son.
All right, well, once in a while, there's the rare Jew that sort of loses his way and leaves the flock and wanders into junior college. He quickly gets out and corrects his course. But not for most. It's just it's basically a whirlpool that just leads into some sort of abyss that they never can get out of.
Take this one call. We've been on hold for 127 minutes.
127 minutes.
Wonderful person.
100 hours in it. 100 minutes in an hour,
sure.
Yes.
Lacey, so bench you from your favorite stage. You're from Texas.
Hour 27 minutes. Okay, go ahead, Lacey.
You're awake.
What's happening?
Okay, gotta wake up there. Wake up.
Call before the show started.
Talk to Ben's son.
What's your name?
Lacey.
Where are you from, Lacey?
Texas.
Where? Where in Texas?
I'm afraid somebody will figure out who I am.
Let me ask you this. Are you one of the ladies that didn't give Ben Stein a lap dance the other week when he was out there?
No.
So you did give Ben Stein.
Are you in Archer City?
No.
Are you anywhere near Wichita Falls?
No.
Okay.
All right, Lacey, do you have a question for Ben?
Well, I guess I still just have what I called in with, but...
All right, go ahead.
Okay, well, it just seems to me that it's kind of like... I don't know if it's me or...
You're fat.
True, please, go ahead.
What?
We have 30 seconds, Lacey, in the show.
Skinny chicks don't stay on hold for 127 minutes.
Okay, come on, Lacey, spit it out. What is it?
Oh.
25 seconds.
Oh, no, I don't
want 20 seconds.
Okay. 18 seconds. 15 seconds. Lacey?
10 seconds.
You have 10 seconds.
Lacey, why did you call?
Why did you wait for 2 hours if you weren't going
to
talk?
Because she wanted to say how much she likes me.
I think she hung up. Drew, you broke her.
There you go.
You broke her spirit.
Sorry about
she
that.
She called, and she stayed on hold for 2 hours and 7 minutes, and then when she called, she was so tapped out that she couldn't go one round.
Well, I think she'd been smoking.
But to be fair, where she is, it's like 8 in the morning.
Yeah, what do you
No, doing? No, no, it's 3 in the morning. It's 2 in the morning.
Whatever it is. We'll take a quick break, because Texas has like 15 time zones,
indeed.
Doesn't it?
Two.
Ben Stein here tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Oh, man. Where does the time go?
This is fun.
Yeah. Ben Stein, come back more often.
I love being here. I'll be honored to come back more often.
Son of the Mask, everyone. February 18th, out in theaters. All right.
You got to bring the guy, officer from Iraq?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Corporal Quinones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might bring him back very soon.
Air Cavalry drives a half track. We'll take a 22-hour extended break. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
And yes. Two, close but not quite as intense, but very elderly having sex.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Very elderly. I don't have a problem.
How dare you attack
people.
Yeah.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. Or the station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Ingold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.